Good morning. Let's start again where we started yesterday and answer questions we asked yesterday and the questions we should have asked yesterday. On Daf Tzadi Hei Amud Aleph, on page Kuf Mem Bet, in the Ein Yaakov Mavor, Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Parchav Aleph, Pasuk Tet Zayin says, V'yishbi Benov Asher B'lidei HaRafa. Yishbi Benov, who was a child of, we translated yesterday, like the Art Scroll translates, a giant. Rashi here points out Harafa is an allusion to Orpah. He was a child of Orpah, as the Gemara says later. Mishkal Keno the Gomer, and his spear weighed 300 copper weights, etc. Vayomer Lakota David. My Yishbi Benov, why is he called Yishbi Benov? Amar Rav Yehuda Amarav. Ish Shabalis Kenov. He's a person who came because of Nov. Amar Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu LeDavid. Hashem said to David, Ad Matai Ye Avon Zeh Tamun Biyadecha. How long will this sin remain in your hands? Al yadcha neherga nov ir hakohanim, vayadcha nitrad doeg hadomi, vayadcha nehergu Shaul shlosh banav. Because of you, nov ir hakohanim was killed, and doeg was driven from Olam Haba, and Shaul and his three sons were killed. We discussed yesterday that some poskim bring from here a proof that a person has to do tshuva when he's indirectly responsible for someone's death. For example, if a person hires or appoints an agent or messenger to do something, and that agent or messenger is killed, that the person who sent him, some say, that the person who sent him has to do tshuva, and other poskim say he doesn't unless the sender has some more level of responsibility, such as David had here, where he misled Kohanim. But if the sender, perfectly innocent bystander, and the whole thing was initiated by the agent, asked to be sent, or other circumstances, so the poskim said that no tshuva is required. It was a machlokas, as we discussed yesterday. I just want to add one more point to that. The Chasam Sofer in Orach Chaim Siman Kuf Ayin Zayin, Tshuva Kuf Ayin Zayin, discusses a case of a maid in a house who fainted, and the lady of the house wanted to pour some brandy down her throat and picked up the wrong bottle and poured kerosene or something else like that down her throat, which did not have the desired effect. In fact, it killed her. Mm-hmm. And the question was whether this lady has to do tshuva. The Chasam Sofer says that she was engaged in a mitzvah of saving a life. She just did it wrong, inadvertently killed the patient instead. Nevertheless, some mild tshuva is required. Mild because we don't want to discourage people from trying to save lives.
She was negligent.
She was negligent, but her negligence can be excused because she panicked. She saw the maid pass out, and she wanted to help. Nevertheless, we say, if Hashem brings such a situation to a person where he accidentally kills someone, there must be some underlying thing for which he has to do tshuva, or Hashem would not have caused him to be, or her in this case, to be the instrument of catastrophe. And therefore, if a person is an instrument of catastrophe, it means he needs to do tshuva for whatever it was that made Hashem want to make him an instrument of this catastrophe. But it should be mild. Whatever we impose on her as a tshuva should be mild, because we're not going to tell her to fast every day for 10 years, or every Monday and Thursday for 10 years. That's too much. He doesn't say that. I'm just, I don't know exactly what where the line would be.
It's a bit of a guessing game, though. Did you consult your local Rav? Because you don't know what you did wrong, and Hashem just brought this bad thing to your hand.
So we discussed early on in this year the concept of Mida Keneged Mida. One of the reasons why Hashem punishes Mida Keneged Mida is that it helps us figure out why, if we're really introspective. Part of the problem with ever knowing what we did wrong is that the average person doesn't think enough about, doesn't introspect enough. So Gemara continues. Hashem offered David Melech a choice. Do you want me to wipe out your descendants, or do you want me to give you into the hands of the enemy? Otim aser v'yad oyev, amar lefanav, ribono shalom, utav emaser v'yad oyev, lo yichle zar'i. He said, better I should be given into the hands of the enemy and not have my descendants wiped out. Yom achad, nifak lishkar bazai. One day, David HaMelech, we translated yesterday, based on Rashi, he went to a village called Shikar Vazai. However, another Rishon, the Aruch, says that this means he went hunting. And the story continues that the Satan appeared to him as a deer. Whatever the words Lishkar Bazai mean, it's clear that David HaMelech went hunting. Because it says the Satan appeared to him as a deer. He shot an arrow at it. He missed it. He chased it all the way into the lands of the Plishtim. Is hunting permitted by halacha? Famous tshuva of Nodib Yehuda. Nodib Yehuda lived in the 1700s in Central Europe. Nodib Yehuda Mahadura Tinyana Yoridea Simon Yud. He says, I received your letter, and even though I don't know who you are, but I always answer questions that are written with wisdom. A little musser there. He then goes on and says, the question is it permitted to go with a fire stick, which today we call a rifle? So is it permitted to go with a gun to hunt animals, or is it usser for a Jew to do this? So what are the possible concerns? He discusses two halachic concerns. One is tsar balei chayim, causing pain to animals. And the second is bal tashtes. It's wasteful. Those are the possible concerns. He's going to reject both of them. He says that as far as tsar balei chayim, it says, kol davar sheyesh bo tzorach la'adam, leit be mishum tsar balei chayim. Anything that man has a need for, there's no issue of tsar balei chayim. So right there, he gave you a heter for medical research on using animals in medical research. Anything that a person has a need for is not tsar balei chayim. V'gam lo sheyach tsar balei chayim elo tsaro ulanicho b'chayim. Furthermore, it's only tsar balei chayim if you leave it to suffer. If you're going to shoot them to death, there's no tsar balei chayim. There's no suffering. They're dead. For that, it's not necessary to assume that he's going to use the hides. There's no tsar balei chayim because they're going to be dead for sport, for fun. As far as bal tashchis, he says that it's not bal tashchis because he's going to enjoy the hide. And he's not doing it in a destructive way. So that's not bal tashchis. Furthermore, he says, there's no bal tashchis because these animals are running around in the forest. Bal tashchis is to take something, bal tashchis means don't destroy. It means to take something that has utility and to destroy it. If you take a good apple pie and throw it in someone's face, that might be bal tashchis. It could be useful too. That's true. But, okay, so that's not a good example. If you take a good apple pie and don't eat it and let it spoil, that would be bal tashchis.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Something that has utility for a person. But an animal running around in the forest has no utility for anybody. And therefore, it's not wasteful to kill it because it wasn't serving any purpose anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So two reasons why it's not tsar balei chayim. One, because it serves a purpose. And two, the purpose might be entertainment. That's a purpose. And two, because you're not leaving them to suffer, you're killing them. And it's not bal tashchis because he could use the hide and because they weren't serving any purpose anyway, so it's not bal tashchis. V'omnam, however, ma'od ani tama al guf hadavar, he says, but I'm in shock by this whole concept. Lo matzinu ish tzayid rak v'nimrod of Esav. There are only two hunters in the Torah, Nimrod and Esav. This is not how Jews behave. Okay. Why would you want to go hunting? This isn't what Jews do.
Oh.
How could a Jew kill an animal for no purpose other than for entertainment?
So now you're drawing a distinction whether he wanted the hide or not.
Correct.
In a sense, if he wanted the hide, he's a shoemaker and he wants the hide. That's
correct.
That's not what we're talking about now.
So he says, if he's a person who earns his living this way, whether it's from the hides or from feeding meat to goyim, lo sheyachas zariut, so that then there's no cruelty involved. We don't say it's cruel to shecht animals and birds or to catch fish that people a person's going to eat. That's not cruel. So if you are a person who, he says, if you're a person who lives off the hides or off selling meat to goyim, then it's certainly permitted. But to do it for entertainment, he says that's a way of Nimrod and Esav. We don't find that Jews do such things, and it's cruel. And then he says, until now, I've been speaking Musar. This is not the way to behave. But the truth is, it's Usar for a different reason, because it's dangerous. And a person's not allowed to endanger himself. To go out in the forest where there are wild animals. We also know that sometimes another hunter shoots the wrong target. So it's dangerous, and therefore it's prohibited. So he says, Me'atani omer she'esh b'davar zeh isur v'gam sakana. It's usur, and it's dangerous. And there's another reason why it's not recommended, because whenever a person puts himself in danger, it causes an accounting to be done in heaven whether this person deserves to be saved from danger. So it can awaken other black marks on his record that he doesn't want awakened. And for all those reasons, Nobi Yehuda says a Jew should not go hunting.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
Does anybody make, you said it wasn't Sarva L'chaim, but does anybody make the distinction that with Shkita, you know, the animal is immediately out? Whereas when you shoot, you don't really know how long the animal's going to suffer until you actually get over there and put it out of its misery or whatever. So there is some period of...
There could be. He doesn't address that. He assumes that you're a good shot and you're killing it right away. Seems to be. That you're right. That seems to be a valid question. The question for the moment is, it's all very nice, but the Gemara says David HaMelech went hunting. How can we paskin against David HaMelech? David HaMelech surely knew everything the Nobi Yehuda knew and far more. The Nachla Shimon on Sefer Shmuel by Rabbi Shimon Krasner of Baltimore asks the question, as do others, and he says that for lack of any other answer, we have to say that David HaMelech did what's mentioned in Gemara in Chulin, Daf Lamed Amud Beis, coming up in Daf Yomi in 15 days. It says that Rava, you know, when before you shecht, you're supposed to show your knife to a chacham, to a Talmud chacham, to inspect your knife. It says that Rava would inspect arrows for Rabbi Yona bar Tachlifa, who would then shecht birds in mid-flight with his arrows. It was such a good shot that he could shecht a bird in a kosher way in mid-flight. So for lack of any other answer, the Nachla Shimon says, we might have to say that David HaMelech could shecht a deer as it was running. It was such a good shot. Except here he missed because he was meant to miss and be led into the land of the Plishtim. But in general, he was such a good shot. He could shecht with an arrow as the deer was running. And therefore, it's not Baal Tashkis. It's not Tzar Baal Chayim. It's not any of the things that the Nodav Yehuda said because he's going to eat the meat afterwards.
That's the wrong implement.
It's not the wrong implement. Any implement with which you can shecht properly.
Oh, it's sharp enough.
It has to be sharp enough and long enough, and you can shecht with it. And you'll have to join Daf Yomi and learn all about this. That's what Daf Yomi is learning about right now. Mm-hmm. He does say, V'yesh li d'chot, like I'm pushing it a little bit, but we don't have any other answer. This is the answer, same answer that the others who raised the question, if they answer it at all, that's the answer they give.
According to that opinion, maybe David should have realized something was wrong, because normally he shot animal shafted there.
Could be. He kept missing. That could be. Good point. The Gemara continues. We read it yesterday that Yishpi Vinov recognized David as the person who killed his brother Goliath. He tied him up. He put him under the olive press and sat on it. And a miracle happened, and David was not crushed. In the meantime, David's nephew and officer, Avishai ben Tsruya, was getting ready for Shabbos and was shampooing his hair, and he saw drops of blood in the water. Some say that he saw a dove flapping its wings furiously, and he took this as a sign, because the Jewish people are compared to a dove, took this as a sign that David HaMelech is in trouble. Nimuke Yosef, one of the Rishonim of Sanhedrin, says elsewhere in Masechet Sanhedrin, there's discussion about divination and using signs like today we're familiar with. The black cat crossed my path, those kinds of things. Gemara talks about similar things, and it's also prohibited to draw any conclusions from a black cat crossing your path other than there might be mice in your house. I've said it as a joke, but that's actually true because of what the Nimuke Yosef is going to explain. So, HaMenachashim, those who are Menach, that's the name of the prohibition, Nichush, those who divine, Nimuke Yosef explains, Kishyotzim Laderech, when they're going out on the road, or they start anything, and they look at what's happening, and they take it as an omen that they should or should not do this. So, for example, if a person says, I dropped my bread, I dropped my walking stick, so that's an omen, I should not go to Ein Yaakov Shir this morning. So, he says that this is prohibited because Ein Bayim Shum Dvar Chochmah, there's no wisdom involved. Ella divrei shtut ba'alma, it's foolishness. He says that this would not be true. So a bird flew across my path, and therefore I'm going to take that as a sign that something unrelated to birds. If a person is a bird expert and understands the behavior of birds, and he says, oh, this type of bird behavior is a sign that an earthquake is coming, I'm going to get out of town, that's okay. That's logical, that's smart, but simply to say, oh, a bird crossed my path, therefore I'm not going to go to my mother-in-law for Shabbos, that's nonsense. So what about here, where Avishai drew conclusions from a dove flapping its wings, and he said that, I see David HaMelech is in trouble. He says, that's not divination, because Avishai didn't say, since the bird is flapping its wings, I'm going to do something. The next line in the Gemara is, he went to David's house to look for him. And he sent a messenger to the Beis Medrash to look for him. So he simply took the bird flapping its wings as a sign that he should do more investigation and then act in a rational way based on his investigation. He didn't simply say, oh, bird's flapping its wings, therefore I'm going to do X. So the latter would be usser, to say the bird's flapping its wings, and I'm going to ask a bird expert, why do birds flap its wings? Oh, an earthquake is coming. That's rational. That's a distinction.
Is it regular flapping, though? I thought it was.
It says it's flapping furiously, but I don't know how, you know, I don't know enough about doves to know the difference between regular flapping and.
I took it as something out of the woods.
Maybe what's out of the ordinary is that a dove flies in your face and flaps its wings at you. That's out of the ordinary. Whether the flapping itself was out of the ordinary, I don't know. But even so, he didn't just say, oh, dove's flapping its wings, that means X. He then went and investigated. Incidentally, I said yesterday that I don't know why he went to David's house and sent a messenger to the Beis Medrash rather than either going both places or sending a messenger both places. So this is what's called the Balabatasha answer. It's the kind of answer that regular homeowners, Balabatim, give rather than great scholars. But I am a regular Balabas, so I think it's okay for me to give this answer. Remember, he was in the middle of taking a shower on Erev Shabbos. Maybe David lived next door to him. The Beis Medrash is 2 blocks away. So he, in the middle of getting ready for Shabbos, he went next door to look, and he sent a messenger to the Beis Medrash.
Maybe could, went to the parallel process.
That could also be.
He'd only go one place.
That I was also thinking of that. It could, like Harry's saying, that he had to do both things at once. So he did one and sent a messenger to the other. It's also a Balabatish answer, but we're all Balabatim, so it's okay. All right. So then the Nebuchadnezzar Yosef says, reading the stars, for a person who knows how to read the stars, he says there is real wisdom there. And if a person really knows what he's doing, That is not in the Isser of Nichush, of divination. There are other issues which we have to know, that our tefillos can overrule the stars and have bitachon and Hashem and all of that. That's not the discussion now. As far as the prohibition of divination, says reading the stars, if you know what you're doing, is not prohibited. He's not talking about the astrology that's next to the comics, which is just part of the comics. He's talking about if you really know what you're doing.
When did he write?
Nimukhi Yosef was a Rishon in the 1200s, 1300s.
Okay. With such people still around then.
Probably so. The Ramban writes that he wanted to understand witchcraft, because to understand the halachos of witchcraft, you have to understand witchcraft. So he went and he talked to witches to learn what witchcraft is. So if Nimukhi Yosef was very shortly after the time of the Ramban, if the Ramban could find witches, Nimukhi Yosef could find astrologers. Okay. The Gemara continues. Avishai ben Tzruya had a question. Is it permitted to ride? We know it's prohibited to ride the king's horse or sit on his throne or use his scepter. B'shat ha-sakana mai. What about in time of danger? So we asked a question yesterday. What's the question? Pikuach nefesh permits everything to save a life. If you need to ride the king's horse to save the king's life, then you ride the king's horse to save the king's life. So Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe, Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Beis, Simon Ayin Tes, also printed in the Dibros Moshe on Sanhedrin, says the following. When it comes to treating a sick person on Shabbos, there's a machlokes between the poskim whether violating Shabbos for a sick person under those circumstances, not all sicknesses permit violating Shabbos, but assume it's life-threatening. So violating Shabbos for a life-threatening medical condition, some say it's hutra, it's absolutely permitted, and some say it's dechuya, it's Shabbos is pushed aside. What's the difference? So we find a similar difference between when it comes to Tumah in the Beis HaMikdash. We just finished Hanukkah. What's Hanukkah about? They couldn't find oil that was pure. They had lots of oil, but they didn't have oil that was pure, just one jug. So what's the big deal? When it's not possible, Tumah is permitted in the Beis HaMikdash. But there's a question. Is Tumah Hutra? Is it absolutely permitted in the Beis HaMikdash? Therefore, if you just have enough oil for one day, enough pure oil, you use that, and then the rest of the time you light the impure oil. Or is it only dechuya, it's only pushed aside, and we do everything possible to avoid Tumah in the Beis HaMikdash, even though it's very difficult. So same thing when it comes to Shabbos, for example. And these are very complicated halachos. Don't draw any halachic conclusions from what I'm saying now. Just giving a simple example. If there's a patient who needs something, needs Chilul Shabbos, in the doctor's judgment, what needs to be done can wait 10 minutes. Should a Jew do it now? Or should he spend 7 minutes looking for a goy, who will then do it in 3 minutes that are left? If you say that Shabbos hutra for a chola, Shabbos is absolutely permitted, then the Jew should go and do it. If you say Shabbos dechuya, Shabbos is only pushed aside, that means to the extent necessary it's pushed aside, but to the extent I can preserve it, I should preserve it and go look for a goy to take care of the sick person. There are other considerations. I say it is not the final halacha, because there are other considerations, such as will you send the wrong message, and next time a Jew, when there isn't time to go look for a goy, the Jew will say, a different Jew who was watching will say, oh, this must not be allowed, because last time I remember they went and they got a goy. So there are other considerations like that. But putting that aside, all other things being equal, is it hutra, and therefore even a Jew can do it? Or is it dechuya, and therefore it's better to get a goy if possible? So that's machlokas. So Rav Moshe says, Avishai ben Tzruya understood that saving a life supersedes everything, certainly supersedes the riding the king's horse. But his question was the following. I don't know where David HaMelech is. A dove came and told me that David HaMelech is in trouble. What's about to happen now is clearly going to be miraculous. We're not talking about compounding a drug for a sick person, which is not permitted on Shabbos, but for someone whose life is at risk, you could do it. Right? We're not talking about that. We're talking something supernatural is about to happen. Can supernatural things happen as a result of an avera? If riding the king's horse is generally an avera, I know that if I could ride the king's horse, or he's actually going to ride the king's donkey in the end, if I know that I could ride the king's horse and save the king through natural means, I have no question it would be permitted. But I know that I'm going to need to rely on miracles, because this whole thing with the dove tells me something strange is going on, and I don't even know where David HaMelech is. So he's not going to be saved through natural means. He's going to be saved through a miracle. If I start off my mission to save him with a sin, can I expect a miracle? That's Rav Moshe's question. I'm sorry?
If you're over Shabbos to save a life, we don't call that a sin.
That's not necessarily the case. If Shabbos is dechuya, it's a sin, but it's a permitted sin. Sometimes sins are permitted. So if Shabbos is hutra, it's not a sin at all. If Shabbos is dechuya, it's a sin, but it's a permitted sin. But nevertheless, difficult to say, because you don't want to discourage people from taking care of sick people on Shabbos. So, you know, I want to be careful how I say this. Rav Moshe discusses this at length, and this is it's a long tshuva. I'm just telling you the conclusion of it. Exactly what does it mean to say Shabbos is hutra versus dechuya? So I want to be careful with the words.
Aren't you also supposed to minimize, even if a miracle is going to occur, you're supposed to do what you can to minimize the miracle?
Okay, so what should he do here? What should he do here to minimize the miracle?
Because it's going to be carried supernatural, so maybe you shouldn't have ridden on the donkey. So riding on the donkey was within Teva, so even though he had this feeling that it was something supernatural, so maybe he was trying to minimize the supernatural aspects.
That could be, but maybe he wanted to ride David HaMelech's donkey because it was the fastest donkey in the land, and he wanted to know. And he wanted to know, I could also minimize the miracle by taking a slightly slower donkey. Should I drive my old yeshivish Ford jalopy, or should I take the king's Lamborghini sports car? I'd be minimizing the miracle if I drive my yeshivish jalopy too. So, I mean, you're right, you have a point. So they answered him that in time of sakana, time of danger, everything is permitted, even riding the king's horse. Rav Moshe infers this from the language of the Gemara, because it says, "Ata shalu be midrasha." He came to the Beis Medrash and he asked, "Amrule." They told him, "Bishata sakana shapir dami." They didn't say "Bishata sakana," in a time of danger, mutar, it's permitted. They said, "In a time of danger, it's a good thing to do. Take the king's horse or the king's donkey. It's not only permitted." It's a good thing to do, because he wasn't really asking. Sorry? Well, taking the king's donkey is not a mitzvah sase, but he's.
It's a good thing, right. Even in this case, it was required.
I don't know if it was required, but he thought it was the most efficient way to go. And his question wasn't whether it's permitted at all. He knew it was permitted. His question was, can I expect a miracle if I'm doing something questionable? And they told him, it's not questionable. Take the donkey. It's a good thing to take the donkey or the horse. Rav Moshe says, now I have a problem. Because this is a proof that a prohibition is hutra. It's absolutely permitted. They didn't tell him, yeah, I guess you could take the donkey if you need to, which would mean it's dechuya, it's pushed off. They told him, it's a good thing, go for it. It means that it's permitted. So it's a kasha on those Rishonim who learn that prohibitions are only dechuya, only pushed off. So he says that they would have to learn Avishai's question a little differently. Well, Avishai was saying, I know all Yisurim are permitted for Pikuach Nefesh. However, am I permitted to actively degrade the king in order to save the king? By riding the king's horse, by a commoner riding the king's horse, it's an insult to the king. Can I expect a miracle to happen to save the king when I'm actively insulting the king? And the answer was, you're not insulting the king because you're going to save his life. Anybody who sees you riding the king's horse, they'll have a question, why is that guy riding the king's horse? But then the next day when they hear on the news that you saved the king's life, then they'll understand. And furthermore, they know you're a tzaddik and they'll be dan l'chav z'chus. When they see you riding the king's horse, they'll say, I guess that guy has some good reason why he's riding the king's horse. And therefore, it's not even degrading to the king. And therefore, you don't have to worry about it. So that's how Rav Moshe understands Avishai's question of whether he was allowed to take the king's horse. There's tangentially discussion that came up in the mid-1800s in Galicia. Rav Shlomo Kluger was a major posek, rabbi of Brody in Galicia. Today it's in Ukraine. And there was somebody was sick and on Shabbos, and he asked a Jew to write and deliver a kvittel, a note, to a Hasidic Rebbe to daven for him on Shabbos. All of this on Shabbos. So there were two prohibitions that were transgressed. One is writing, and the other was going outside of the Tchum Shabbos, out traveling from town to town. And this caused a huge uproar. And Rav Shlomo Kluger talks about this. Other poskim talk about it. And the Mishnah Berurah brings it. It doesn't bring the whole discussion, but the Psak Halacha, that when we say Shabbos can be violated for a sick person, that only permits violating Shabbos for natural cures, going to the doctor, going to the emergency room, compounding prescriptions, all of those things, natural cures. To violate Shabbos to bring about a supernatural cure is absolutely usur, absolutely prohibited. All the poskim say so. Maybe this will answer your question. But the question is then about wearing amulets on Shabbos. Makobel, a real makobel, not a fraud, writes an amulet and you wear it around your neck on a necklace. That's carrying on Shabbos, wearing a necklace. If it's jewelry, anybody, it's not an ornamental necklace. Mm-hmm. The halacha there is that is permitted. If it's an amulet, the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Berurah explain how you test an amulet to know whether it's almost certainly going to work. And then it would be permitted because that's not supernatural anymore once the amulet's been tested using the test methods described in the Shulchan Aruch. And furthermore, it looks like an ornament, even though it's not an ornament, it looks like one. So these reasons combine to make it permitted. But if it was a brand new amulet that had never been tested, that would fall into the category of a supernatural cure that would not be permitted. So maybe that's the answer to Howie's question. Have a good day.